actually out of breath running from the K.S. Arto greenhouse over to the K.S. Arto kitchen.
How far is it?
Well, as I get
about
older, it seems further away. So welcome to the Good Food Hour, everyone. It's me, Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash. Hello there, sir.
How are you?
I'm doing well. So last week you were the featured guest star, the honoree at the Sonoma County auction, which I understand raised about $6 million, which
it
is
marvelous. It was extraordinary. You know, it's one of those things that, it's kind of funny. I'll confess this. You know, when I went, they said, oh, do you want us to take your credit card so that you can bid? And
I'm a chef.
I said, sure. And there wasn't anything I could buy. But it's so great that people are willing to spend, you know, boatloads of money because of what all of the benefits that come from the auction and all of the organizations that it supports.
Marvelous. So you were there on Friday evening for dinner and then on Saturday.
Yeah, up at the Redwood House, which is part of Kendall Jackson's beautiful piece of property up toward, you know, up in Healdsburg, north of Healdsburg and all of that stuff. And Justin and Stacy, who are the chefs at KJ, did the most marvelous meal. I had to write him a note afterward and said to say, you know, it was the best meal I've, it was four courses. Each course was perfectly portioned, you know, too often they're either too big or too little. Really delicious kind of local food, not silly.
Not fussed over?
Not fussed over. As Julia Child would say, somebody has had their fingers in my food.
Good impression. Well, here's a topic I knew nothing about until we received this book on our desk, and that is the world of Indian sweets. The book is called Milk and Cardamom, Spectacular Cakes, Custards, and More, Inspired by the Flavors of India. And the author is with us today, who came up from the Bay Area to sit with us, and that's Ital Basavada. And we want to thank you for coming to Santa Rosa, California today. Have you visited Santa Rosa before, or is this your first visit?
This is actually my first time in Santa Rosa, so we're going to be spending the day. My husband and my daughter are at the park right now, and with Doyle Park. And we're going to be spending the day and just checking Santa Rosa out.
Well, thank you for coming, and thank you for bringing some samples, I believe, maybe from your book. We'll try some of these.
Yes.
So we have a lot of Indian cookbooks in our library after 32 years of doing the show. Yeah. And we've had a lot of Indian chefs, mainly from the New York area, come and visit us here in the studio for cookbooks. But I don't know whether we've ever focused on desserts of India.
We were talking before we came on the air about, and you were saying that the world of desserts is either it was very traditional or mm-hmm. French based, mm-hmm. Or that they're just family recipes.
Yeah, it's a lot of them are a lot of the recipes from my book are things that my mom would make at home, and a lot of recipes are just really really time consuming and take forever to make, and you'll see them only at Mithai shops, and there aren't many in the U.S. Mm. I grew up in New Jersey, which there's a huge population of Indians.
Are your mom and dad both of Indian?
Yeah.
Or from India?
Yeah, both.
All right. So you're first generation.
Yes.
Right.
My parents came in the 80s and settled in Jersey. But luckily, you know, being in New Jersey and there being such a huge population of Indians there, we had Mithai shops in Edison and Jackson Heights.
And the word you're using, Mithai, what is that?
So Mithai is basically the Indian word for sweets. Mm-hmm. It's anything that's sweet. Mithai itself just means just sweetness.
Mm. Oh.
So anything that you would consider a dessert is considered a Mithai. And Mithai Walas would be people who make sweets.
Oh. So it's interesting. I think the thing that, I love Indian food, but I think I was saying to you, sometimes it seems so complicated and also deals with a lot of ingredients that I don't know where to get them and all that, although it's changing. And you were making that point too, that, you know, some of these odd spices and we're going to talk about it today, jaggery, which is sugar, but of a special kind. They're much more available.
Yeah, I think we have a lot more access either through Indian stores or even you can find things at your local grocery store, like at your Safeway or ShopRite and Amazon. I mean, you can find anything on Amazon, really, so it's wonderful.
So you have a, I'm just going to make an assumption, a legendary sweet tooth.
Oh, yeah.
And you grew up eating these Indian-type desserts. Were you drawn to these, or so many of us kind of distance ourselves from our heritage, I would have to say?
It really depended. For the most part, I really wanted cookies and cakes and brownies and ice cream, and it just was not going to happen. Baking is not a thing where my parents are from. Most Indian families don't have ovens.
Oh, sure.
So almost every dessert my parents made was milk-based or flour-based.
Mm-hmm.
And it meant flour-based, meaning you toasted it on the stove in like a wok. With a lot of ghee. But yeah, I always wanted like the more American desserts. Like for my birthday, I wanted a birthday cake, just the boxed funfetti stuff. And I would get instead, you know, an Indian dessert with a candle in it. One of the first recipes in the book is Sito, which is a semolina pudding.
Yeah.
It's essentially semolina toasted in a lot of ghee and then sweetened with sugar. And then you add cardamom and
nuts
kind
of like
it.
The American apple pie, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
so good. You know, that brings up an interesting thing. You were talking about in the book of how you came to fame, because you were a participant on MasterChef, weren't you?
Yeah, yes, I was.
And the thing that I guess made your name was an apple pie.
Yeah.
But not a typical American apple pie.
No, I added a bunch of Indian spices. I added star anise and cardamom and clove, more than your typical cinnamon and nutmeg that you would typically get in your apple pie. And then I topped it all off with a cardamom whipped cream. Cardamom is my favorite. Obviously, it's part of the title of my book.
I think it's the spice of India, isn't it?
It truly is. I like to call it like the Indian vanilla because it's in all the desserts. Mm. It's floral. There's a comfort, warming kind of aroma to it. And I mean, it's become huge now in baking. If you watch The Great British Bake Off, I mean, every episode someone's got cardamom involved in their dessert.
So did you send the program your recipe, or how did they choose you?
So I tried out. They had an audition in San Francisco, and my husband kind of like forced me to go. I was working as a healthcare consultant for a really long time. My background's in biochemistry. I worked as an analytical chemist for a while. Hated that, went to healthcare. And he just saw me slowly just draining away. So he's like, just quit your job. Just do it. And it was the first time in my life I had the ability or had anyone to be able to financially back me to be able to quit and pursue a passion.
So you made this apple pie?
Yeah.
You brought it to the audition?
So my audition item was actually another Indian-inspired dessert. So I made a white chocolate cardamom mousse tart in like a pistachio nut crust. And I was the only person to make a dessert in my small... So they bring you in 20 at a time. And in my group of 20, I was the only one that had a dessert. And I'm like, well, I'm not making it. And somehow I made it to the next round. So when you get in, they ask you to submit about 5 recipes, 1 dessert, 1 protein, 1 just whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And the apple pie was on my signature dishes that I had submitted. And they're like, all right, we want you to share that.
So then you ended up competing in that season.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So how is Gordon Ramsay to get along with?
He's actually really nice.
You know, he was just here in Santa Rosa a couple of weeks ago. Stopped by and did the restaurant tour.
Yeah.
So he was better than he was portrayed on the on the TV. He didn't bring you to tears.
Oh, he did. he definitely did. But in the sense of, you know when you like disappoint your dad and you feel really bad about disappointing him? It was more like those like disappointment tears, like I'm so sorry, versus like I'm scared of you, please don't yell at me. He was so supportive. I'm vegetarian. I grew up a lifelong vegetarian, and there was a lot of meat challenges. And he would always come by and say, you can do it. You'll be able to do it. I have chefs in my kitchen that are, you know, Muslim and don't eat pork, and they cook it just perfectly. You'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So he was very supportive and always loved my desserts. So that made me really happy. I was like, okay, well, if he likes it.
So you have a website, too, don't you, that is same title as the book.
Yeah, it's milkandcardamom.com.
And how can people find out about it? I mean, just go to...
Yeah, milkandcardamom.com. I share a bunch of dessert recipes, but I also share a lot of traditional Gujarati, like regional cuisine. Mm-hmm. So my parents are from the state of Gujarat, which is the little peninsula, the knob that hangs off the west coast of India. It was a huge trading port way back when, during the spice trade. And there's been a lot of influence from Persia, Ethiopia, Greece in Gujarati cuisine. So it's got a really unique, it's so very different than what people consider traditional Indian food.
Me included, mm-hmm. said, I'm going to go have Indian food. And it's like, no, you can't say that because India is such a vast place and the cooking is so different, isn't it, everywhere?
So different.
Have you visited that area?
I've gone about 5 times. I'm going again in December to my parents' villages. So my mom and dad both grew up in tiny, tiny villages that are like a bus, train, and like a cow-pulled wagon right away to get to. And my mom's side grows mangoes and peanuts and cumin, and my dad's side grows tamarind and much more. So I come from farming
and cardamom.
No, cardamom. I wish. Yeah. So cardamom grows in South India, in places like Munnar and Kerala. Actually, a lot of spices come from South India. Peppercorns and more nutmeg.
So how hard was it to get a publisher interested in this book?
Oh, so hard. I had actually shopped this around. Even getting a book agent was, I wasn't actually able to get a book agent, period. I had a couple say that it was too niche, that dessert books in general are hard to sell, let alone something so niche as Indian desserts. I looked for 5-6 months trying to see if anyone would be interested. Mm-hmm. And then luckily Page Street Publishing reached out and I pitched them like, hey, I have this idea. It's already like, I have a proposal and everything. And they're like, yeah, let's do it. And I'm like, sweet. Yeah. Okay.
But what's interesting is this, people listening may say, well, I don't really like Indian food, so I'm not interested. But what you've done, you've blended this book, Western style desserts and Indian style desserts. And it's not a stretch. I mean, let's think about India. It was colonized and occupied by England for a couple hundred years. There must be a long tradition of Western-style English desserts entrenched in India.
Oh, deep. When I was doing research for the book, I realized almost, I would say 80% of the desserts were related to either British, Dutch, Portuguese, and even Greek, because Alexander the Great came into India, and there's a whole lot of food exchange that occurred then. I have a cookie recipe called Naan Kadai, which is actually a Dutch cookie that stemmed from a Dutch bakery that was built in India to serve the Dutch population there. And then when they left, the Indians took over and were like, oh, we're just going to add some nuts and some cardamom and make it ours. Even the story of chai. Chai was brought in by the British, and they sold a special tea called CTC, which is cut, tear, curl.
And cheap tea.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just, you know, pretty much like tea dust, really. Yeah. It's the cheapest black tea you can get. And they were doing that to create a profit stream from Indians. And initially they were serving it their way, which is steeped in water and maybe a little sugar. And we were like, nope, no thanks. This does not taste good. And we took a traditional Ayurvedic drink that we would have every once in a while and kind of mixed that with the tea. Indian tea in general is like one part water to like 4 parts milk. Mm-hmm. And we have all these different spices.
So there's 50 million recipes for chai.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We think of it as this one... Mm-hmm. One drink here in the United States, chai tea, and it's supposed to taste exactly alike.
Yeah, and they're not. Every family has their own style. My mom has a version. My grandmother had a version. My mother-in-law has a version. Some people use whole spices. Some people make their own chai masala with a blend of spices that they roast themselves and grind. Some people just buy the chai masala from the store. Mm-hmm. Everyone has their own version. And that's, I think, the beauty of chais. Like, when I got married, my husband's side of the family, my family sat in a circle, and as an icebreaker, we all, like, explained what our chai recipes were.
Yeah. Oh, great. Oh,
no one wonderful. Had, it was all different. Everyone had their version. Some people put green tea.
Everyone has their own matzo ball recipe. Yeah. Every culture, right?
Yeah. And I think that's the beauty in it, in that now I get to share, you know, if I'm feeling nostalgic and I want my mom's version, I'll make that. And if I, you know, my dad has a certain kind he likes, which is gardak, which means very strong black, like, tea, and I'll make that for him.
Beautiful. So early in the book, you made a comment which I thought was really interesting, and this should convince people to get this book and try some of the recipes, that you said that Indian desserts are easier than American desserts.
Yeah.
That because there isn't such a focus on exact measurement and all that stuff. It's what you were saying about chai. Yeah. It can be anything you want it to be.
Yeah. I think when I was asking my mom for some of her recipes, she would just kind of be like, oh, yeah, just, like, add a little bit of nut powder. You can add whatever spice you want. If you want to use ghee, you can. By the way, you can use this instead if you want. There was no set measurements or set recipe.
It wasn't French.
No, it was not. Yeah. But what I realized, a lot of it is just mixing and looking for cues, looking for color changes, looking, you know, smelling what's going on. I have a recipe for a chickpea flour fudge that's super traditional. Mm-hmm. And you just mix ghee and chickpea flour, like 1-to-1 ratio, and you toast it over the stove until you see it get dark and you start smelling like a nutty flavor.
That was a wild recipe, using the chickpea flour. Yeah. I put a star by that one because it looks so interesting. You did too?
Yeah. And it's so simple, and there's no temperature. You're not looking for, like, once it hits 300 degrees or anything like that. You don't have to stress about it. You're just looking for scent and color, and that's it. And
there are lots of nuts that are used in Indian desserts, aren't there? Yeah. I mean, I was really impressed with all kinds of things, which I just didn't know.
Yeah. Nuts are actually quite expensive in India.
You mentioned when you go visit, you take pistachios because they're 2 to 3 times as expensive in India.
Yeah, they're so expensive. I mean, I remember as a kid, my mom going to the store and just buying pounds and pounds of almonds and cashews and pistachios to bring back to her family in India as gifts. And I remember thinking, why are you giving them, like, don't they want toys? Why are you giving them this? And I never really understood until it's a special food. It's a special ingredient. You, even at temple, when you go to the temple and you leave, they'll give you something called prasadi, which is like blessed food. And it's always a mixture of nuts or a sweet made from nuts. Mm. They just are also beneficial for health. Like, my mom would make me 5 almonds that have been soaked in water overnight every morning because they're supposed to be good for memory. Same with walnuts. Like,
boy, I gotta try that.
I can hear many listeners going, what was that again?
But even as a kid, what we would do is my mom would go to the Italian markets, especially during the winter, because that's when she would find, like, whole walnuts and whole pecans, and she would buy a bunch of them, bring them home, and my dad would sit at home because we had one nutcracker, and we'd all sit in a circle around my dad, and he would sit there and crack all these walnuts and pecans, and we'd eat them raw, like, as soon as they came. We never toasted or roasted
but when they're fresh, they're so delicious.
Yeah, I actually got yelled at when I was on MasterChef for putting untoasted walnuts in something.
That's
and I was
just not
like,
done.
Oh, no. Like, I'm like, that's how my family eats them. He's like, no, that's not how you do it. And I'm like, oh, okay.
So you mentioned, of course, cardamom is like the touchstone spice of Indian cuisine, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And ghee, very, very important that you always have probably 5 pounds of ghee.
Oh, yeah.
And also the few other items that made an appearance in the book, and that's milk powder, non-fat milk powder, toasted milk powder, which adds a depth of flavor, and sweetened condensed milk is an important one also.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't need refrigeration, it was available. So could you talk, I know it's a big subject, and you can tell me no if you want to, but would you talk about Ayurvedic, the tradition, because it's about it's this consciousness about food and eating and your health. And
yeah. So I grew up in a household. My mom eats and drinks totally by Ayurveda. In the morning, she'll have, you know, water that has fennel that's been soaking in it. And everything you eat you eat seasonally. Some foods are considered to be warming for your body or too hot, and then some foods are considered cooling. So one of the recipes I have is a masala limeade, which is made with cumin and fennel.
It's the wildest thing I've ever seen. And black peppercorns.
And black salt. And those are considered to have cooling properties.
Is this one of your mother's recipes?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's considered to have a very cooling property in Ayurveda, and you're supposed to have those during very hot days. And it will just help cool your body down. And in the winters, you'll have a lot of like whole wheat and millet flour. Like, I wasn't allowed to have grapes in the winter because they're considered cooling. And my mom's like, you'll get sick. You cannot have that. And I think partial is eating what's in season. And the other part is just being, you know, knowledgeable what you're putting in your body and what you want out of it. Turmeric is a big thing to talk about.
Isn't it interesting how it's become now? It is a big thing, and you can buy it fresh. And
oh, yeah.
All of that, yeah.
I remember going to Whole Foods and seeing fresh turmeric, and I'm like, my mom's going to flip. especially when I saw the price, I'm like, oh, man. Because my mom would pickle it. She would actually, when we were little, she would, when we'd go to India, she'd pickle it and then bring the jar of pickled turmeric home. And she would make me eat like a chunk of it at dinner in the winters to keep all the bugs away. But I mean, it was my mom. You know how, like, what is it? The big fat Greek wedding, they put Windex on everything. Yeah, turmeric was like that for my mom.
We'll take a break at that point. An intriguing conversation in the KSRO kitchen today, which is great. If you want to join the conversation, of course you can. 636-1350 to talk with Hital Vasavada. Her last name is spelled Vasavada. She's written a brand new book, just came out in the summer, and it came to our attention when we saw this New York Times article, which was quite a nice plug that they wrote about you, the sweet hallmark of an Indian celebration. The book is called Milk and Cardamom, and one of you will win an autographed copy at the end of the show. And the timing is great because Indian New Year is right around the corner, and we'll talk about that when we return. Chef John Ash and Steve Garner in the KSRO kitchen.
Larkfield hears FM News Talk KSRO on Crystal Clear FM at 103.5.
The North Bay is rich with creative people. Being an artist or a budding entrepreneur takes creativity and hard work. It often requires expensive technology and education to finish your projects. I'm Jared with Alexis, and we're with 180 Studios.
180 Studios is a makerspace in Santa Rosa, providing public access to over 16,000 square feet of professional equipment. This October, 180 Studios Makerspace is transforming into a horror space. We will be hosting costume-making workshops throughout the month. Perfect for families, cosplayers, and young makers. Visit 180studios.org for the calendar of events. You don't want to miss it.
The costume making workshops are only $25. Don't get stuck buying an expensive, boring costume. Have fun, get creative, and make your own costume at 180 Studios.
With both parent-child workshops and adult-only workshops available.
Mark your calendars for our October Meet the Makers Halloween Carnival with costume and pumpkin carving contests for all ages. Visit 180studios.org to register. That's 180studios.org.
The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market is bursting with wonderfully fresh local fruits and vegetables from your favorite farmers and ranchers. There's an abundance and wide variety of heirloom tomatoes, early girls, beefsteak, sun golds, and more. Don't miss this year's peaches, nectarines, pears, and apples. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market has artisan foods ranging from fabulous bread, olive oils, balsamic vinegar, marinades, tea blends, to hummus and handmade pastas. Browse the artisan area for handcrafted gifts. Start your day with friends at the market. They're here to greet you year-round, Wednesday and Saturdays, 8:30 till 1 at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
A little preparation will make you and your family safer in an emergency. A week's worth of food and water, radio, flashlight, batteries, and a first aid kit are a good start. To learn more, visit safetyactioncenter.pge.com.
After more than 15 years of pouring some of the best limited production West Coast Pinot Noirs in Healdsburg, the annual Pinot on the River Festival is relocating to Old Courthouse Square in Santa Rosa. Meet the winemakers and enjoy over 40 small production wineries and artisan food vendors from 11 to 3 to celebrate all things Pinot Noir. Proceeds benefit Sonoma County Pride. Buy your tickets now at PinotOnTheRiver.com, October 5th, 11 to 3, PinotOnTheRiver.com.
Hi, I'm Vanessa with PG&E. 811 is a free service to keep our communities safe. Before you do any digging, PG&E will mark your gas and electric lines so you don't hit them. Call 811 before you dig. To learn more, visit pge.com/safety.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
In the KS Arnold Kitchen, Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash. And joining us live today in the KS Arnold Kitchen is Gital Basavada. She is the author of Milk and Cardamom, a brand new dessert cookbook that's taking me places where I never thought I would go.
But I have to say, again, we said it earlier, the recipes, for the most part, I think you only have a couple of complicated recipes in there, but for the most, they're very straightforward and simple. And it's like, I thought to myself, oh, I can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just tasted something called jaggery powder. Is this a new product?
Yes. So I've only seen jaggery powder in the market maybe in the last year. Before, you had to buy bricks of it. And I'm talking like a gallon-sized brick that you'd need, like,
and it's
a hammer
and sugar. It's just unprocessed, yeah, unrefined, mm-hmm, sugar. Mm-hmm. So this tastes like no sugar I've ever tried. Mm-hmm. It's very complex.
It's, we were saying off air, it's reminiscent of the Mexican piloncillo, mm-hmm, yes, which is the same thing, in which the juice is just cooked down, yep, not refined. So you get, exactly, all kinds of things in it. Ash, bugs.
No, all sorts, yeah.
It's spectacular. And you use this in a lot of the baked goods in the book?
Oh, yeah.
And there's no substitute for it, really, is there? I mean, yes, there is, but...
Not really. If you want that flavor, there's just like a very deep caramel toffee mineral flavor that it has that it's hard to replicate. The closest thing I think some people could use is muscovado sugar.
Uh-huh. Oh.
But you can get jaggery powder now on Amazon, and I wouldn't be surprised if it starts showing up in grocery stores.
So let me ask you, your favorite Indian grocery stores, mm-hmm, do you have one or two or three?
Oh, yeah. I grew up on Patel Brothers. They have a bunch all over the South and East Coast, and I think there's one in SoCal, too. Mm-hmm. But I used to go to their original store in Edison, and then now it's in Chicago and Chattanooga, mm-hmm, and it's like a huge grocery store. Mm-hmm. When I went, it was like a bunch of wood desks and like some boxes of vegetables and like a couple, you know, shelves. But Patel Brothers has everything. It's wonderful.
What about the Bay Area?
Vic's Chat House is great.
Oh, Vic's Chat House?
Yeah.
Oh,
so yeah. Vic's, mm-hmm, it used to be smaller, but they expanded, I want to say, like a year or two ago. And it's so much bigger. They're so helpful.
Where is that?
That's in Berkeley.
In Berkeley.
In South Bay, I go to Namaste Plaza because it's down the street from me in Belmont.
And it's all Indian, too, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And the other one is Trinetra in Cupertino that I'll go to, which is a more of a South Indian grocery store.
if you would have asked me before I met you about cardamom, I would have said, yeah, there's cardamom. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize there's a whole world of cardamom. You brought in several of them. Are they grown in different parts of
The world?
I was saying, and you were pointing out, that they're labeled single origin heirloom. So they come from, I mean, it's
one
like
farm.
It's like coffee or something like that. And it can be so different.
Yeah, so I brought Diaspora Coast cardamom. Hers is grown in South India, and she just released it recently. And it has a really beautiful menthol flavor. Like, it's great for chai. And then the other two I brought are from Burlap and Barrel, which are also single origin. And they have a completely different aroma, flavor. It's just like if you were to use paprika, that Hungarian paprika is different than Spanish paprika. You know, when smoky, when sweet. There's a lot of nuance between.
So you said in the book, which I thought was interesting, about how, I mean, for most of us, we go and there's cardamom on the shelf. It's already been ground and all of that. And it's just, don't
She's
do that.
She's vigorously shaking her head no at this point.
Don't do it. I mean, once it's ground, about 3 weeks later, it's bland. You're not going to get any flavor out of it. You're going to have to use
a spice grinder to grind it fresh.
I grind it fresh. In the book, I'll say, you know, freshly ground cardamom. Because you just need very little to get that flavor. And the other thing is, you know, I think a lot of people are so conscious of when they're buying groceries, you know, buying the organic fruits and vegetables and, you know, going to the farmer's market to get their eggs and meat. But people forget about spices and being, you know, very conscious of where you buy it from. And I think, you know, companies like Burlap and Barrel and Diaspora Co., they cut out the middleman. So it's the money goes directly to the farmer.
Oh, nice.
Which is wonderful. Also, they're just better quality, in my opinion. Same if you were going to get, you know, tomatoes from your local farmer versus like something grown and driven over.
We mentioned that Diwali, the Hindu New Year, is coming up the end of October in about a month, and you're excited about this. Are there recipes that are kind of New Year style recipes in the book?
Yes. I have a very traditional Diwali recipe called Jhurma Ka Ladwa, which is
easy for you to say.
So basically, jhurma means like a mashup or smashed, and ladwa is anything that's round. Or balls. So it's basically made with whole wheat flour, coarse whole wheat flour that's toasted in ghee, mixed with melted jaggery, and you add nut powders and cardamom to it, and you pack it into a ball, and my mom would hide a quarter in one of them. And whoever would get the quarter was lucky for the new year. And it was a really big deal. I would actually smash, when I was little, I got in trouble a lot because I would smash all of them to find the quarter.
You were mischievous.
It was a problem. But they're so good. It's almost like my mom will say, like, oh, it's like a granola bar. I mean, it's not as coarse as a granola bar. It's definitely fine, but
so it's kind of like the Mardi Gras king cake, where
the baby.
But except for a baby, it's a coin.
Yes.
So that's one recipe. What other recipes?
I have a gugra galette. So gugra is almost like a sweet empanada. Inside, you'll put something called coya, which is milk that's cooked down until you just have the milk fat, and then you mix that with nut powder and cardamom. And you fill it inside of a pastry and deep fry it. I make it easier by making it into like a galette. So you just, I have a pie crust recipe. If you want to be, you know, quick about it, you could definitely buy some pie crust from the store. And it's like a frangipane crust with gugra kind of filling. And I always serve it with like a big heaping tablespoon of
So we should mention it's really interesting, the chapters in the book. Creams and custards is one. Small bites, which is kind of that that little roll-up thing that you just mentioned. Cookies and bars, cakes and tarts. And then you have breads and jams, which I thought was interesting. That I was sort of unaware that in India, they bake bread every day often.
Yeah.
And jams, they have all kinds of things to go with it. And then a big last section on drinks, which I guess is dessert also.
Yeah, drinks have a very unique part of Indian culture. Anytime anyone comes to your house, you're supposed to offer them a drink, whether it be chai, water, a sharbat, which is just usually a fruit-based drink that you make at home. But it is something you're supposed to do. Whenever we had anyone come to the house, it was my job to get all the cups together and, you know, make something. Mm-hmm. So in the drink section, I have a lot of recipes like strawberry lassi, which is, again, easy. Mangoes are not always in season. But you get that tart and sweetness together. The masala limeade I talked about earlier.
Which is you said is your favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Drink.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. When I was pregnant, it was a problem. I would any Indian restaurant I went to, anytime I was home, I was drinking way more than I should have been. It didn't help with the acid reflux. But yeah.
Well, we should maybe go through chapter and grab a couple recipes of our favorite because we don't want to run out of time. So when we come back, we're going to go through each section, and John and I, without consulting with each other, have flagged our favorite recipes.
Awesome.
You can comment on those. So, by the way, if you're just joining us, you've missed some really good conversation with Hital Vasavada. She's the author of Milk and Cardamom, Spectacular Cakes, Custards, and More, inspired by the flavors of India. Back after this.
Join the switch to crystal clear KSRO-FM, 103.5 Santa Rosa, Windsor, 94.5 Petaluma. Hear the difference.
This is George Adair with Cross Country Mortgage. If you're in the market to buy a home, this message is for you. My team and I are experts at providing hands-on assistance to getting your home financing done fast and with confidence. Folks, I've been helping people obtain the right financing for nearly two decades. This experience has helped hundreds of homeowners get through some challenging situations. Maybe you're a property investor, or how about a first-time home buyer? Divorces are very complicated, and you need my experience to understand what your mortgage options are. Inherited property or rent-to-own agreements are also my specialty. Financing a home is a huge transaction in your life. When combined with a challenging situation, you need the advice and confidence to do it right. If you're ready for a great lending experience, call 707-583-8100. That's 707-583-8100. Or visit georgeadair.com. That's georgeadair.com.
Cross Country Mortgage, NMLS ID 2039, and George Adair, NMLS ID 245370. Equal housing lender, subject to credit approval.
We're here with Art Nybrief, a leading long-term care planning specialist in Northern California, talking about the top three misconceptions when it comes to long-term care planning. Art, what's the first misconception?
That health insurance pays for long-term care. Unfortunately, it does not. It pays for up to 100 days of skilled recovery after one has been in the hospital a minimum of 3 days, but it never covers long-term care.
What can people do to get it covered?
Call me. I love helping people. It's an honor when people trust me enough to share their health information with me so that I can help them. I'm excited that each day I get to leave people in a better place.
Call Art at 707-974-8282. Online, it's artforltc.com.
The availability of this coverage is based upon one's health. Hoping you'll never need care is a desire, not a plan. Call me and I'll help you create a plan.
Call Art at 707-974-8282.
Arthur Nybrief, California Insurance License Number OC22076.
Stand up to bullying with Community Matters. Attend the Upstander Revolution event on Thursday, October 3rd at La Rosa Tequileria and Grill in Santa Rosa. Join them from 5 to 7:30 p.m. for nibbles, no host libations, student speakers, and a silent auction, all to support Seeing Their Safe School Ambassadors program in every school in Sonoma County. Purchase tickets at community-matters.org/events. Proudly sponsored by Amaturo Sonoma Media Group, W Real Estate, and Mechanics Bank.
Hi, Bennett Valley and Santa Rosa. I'm Kristeny, the new owner of Bennett Valley Pet Center. Please bring your furry family member in to say hi, or bark or meow, as the case may be. We would love to meet them and you. We carry great brands of dog and cat food, from Taste of the Wild and Natural Balance to Signature and Origin. We have a huge treat wall with cookies, unique bones, toys, and frozen goodies. Come down to the pet store and we will spoil your pups with treats and fun. Bennett Valley Pet Center on Yalupa next to CVS.
Every moment is just for you at Graton Resort and Casino. Go all in on exciting gaming action or celebrate and explore 12 great restaurants, 6 bars and lounges, nightly entertainment, and more. It's your moment right in the heart of Sonoma Wine Country. staycation in luxury. From our beautiful rooms to our world-class spa and fabulous pool with cabanas. Book your stay today at GreytonResortCasino.com. Your moment awaits. See you there.
So we are jumping into the new cookbook by Hital Vasavada, Milk and Cardamom, and you have brought us a lovely dessert in a dish on on page 28. What is this?
And it's I say it again. I was saying to you, I love these. I want to talk Indian.
It's berry papadoy. It's a Bengali dessert that's made with yogurt that you mix in with heavy cream. Typically, you put jaggery in. I use berries to do the sweetening and a little bit of condensed milk to keep that rich milky flavor.
It's wonderful. How important is yogurt in the Indian culture?
Oh, it's huge. My mom actually brought over a little bit of the yogurt from India when she moved to the U.S. She wrapped up a small, tiny container in carbon paper to hide it through security because apparently you can't see carbon paper and x-ray machines. And then after that, whenever she would go to India, she'd get like another amount just like to restart the culture, and she'd smuggle it in her brow blouse. But I was interviewed for an article about yogurt by Priya Krishna for the New York Times, and I talked about that. But she had someone that she interviewed that dipped a piece of their sari in the yogurt, let it dry, and then rehydrated it when they came to America.
Because the culture is so very different than anything you
get. Every family has their own version.
And it's different than any of our typical yogurt. You were saying it's not like Greek yogurt or any of that kind of stuff.
It's tart. It's loose. Much looser than the yogurt. Like my mom calls like Danon or like any of the American style yogurts to be too like gummy or viscous. Mm-hmm.
Well, and often they add gelatin to it too, which is a no-no for you.
Yes, a no-no for me.
So no pectin, no gelatin.
No, nothing. So Indian yogurt is just, we have it every day. It was a part of my meal pretty much on a daily basis. We made our own yogurt.
So the other recipe that I was really, and actually I've tried to do this, now I'm going to do your recipe because I have a grandson who's a vegetarian. He's become a vegetarian. And you make panna cotta, which is typically made with gelatin, but gelatin comes from animal sources.
Yes.
And you use agar-agar. Is it used? And what is agar-agar?
So agar-agar is basically a seaweed that can help pretty much set anything. It's different from gelatin in the sense that you don't need to, gelatin you dissolve in cold water and then you put it in the hot liquid. Agar agar, you can put it directly in the hot and you just have to reach, I want to say it's 186 or 190-ish. Mm-hmm. As soon as you hit that, it'll definitely set. It's dissolved in. And then you just let it cool and it's great. There are Indian desserts that you can find made with agar agar. They call it grass jelly.
Grass jelly.
But all over, usually like Southeast Asia, there's a lot of desserts made with agar.
Well, I'm a big fan of berry papadoy.
Thank you
for this.
That should be your new name. Hello. I'm berry papadoy.
The small bite section is the next, and that talks about the milk fudges and the toasted flour and the nut-based sweets, which are just beautiful. That's when you use the dry milk powder as a shortcut.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the chickpea. You had a funny, I won't go into it, but barfi.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That was another reason. I'm like, we need a better name or at least spelled differently.
But I put two big stars in the cookies and bars section. To me, this is going to be made immediately. The Gari stuffed Italian wedding cookies. I make wedding cookies a lot. It's my favorite cookie. I never thought to do it this way. Would you describe that process?
So Gari is an Indian dessert that's famous in Surat, which is a city in Gujarat. And it's basically a mash of similar to the gugurah filling, nut powders, cardamom, and koya or mawa, which is milk fat. Mm-hmm. And then usually that's wrapped in like a whole wheat dough and then deep fried and then soaked in syrup. Instead, I wrap it in a simple Italian wedding cookie dough. Uh-huh. I grew up in Jersey, in literally the town they filmed The Sopranos in. And I would go to the Italian bakery all the time. So this was kind of my homage to that. Like my neighbors were Italian nonas. It was great.
So you mentioned also in there, which I thought was interesting, the, how do you pronounce it? Katai.
Yeah.
That it was your mom's only cookie that she made for you.
That's the only cookie recipe she knew.
Yeah.
That's really the only cookie recipe I think a lot of Indian moms might know, because...
Again, so it's kind of like our chocolate chip or something.
Yeah. My mom was telling me when she was little, she would get so excited for Diwali time because her dad would give her a little bit of money to go to the corner bakery and get naan katai and shortbreads.
Well, I just getting back to the gauri stuff, the Italian wedding cookie. This is the ultimate fusion cookie, isn't it? The Tony Soprano cookie meets you.
Yes, exactly.
And then also that wonderful riff on the brown butter ghee shortbread cookies. I know John and I both are big fans of shortbread cookies. And actually, when I make my wedding cookies, I use brown butter. I always brown the butter before eating that. So, but I never really cooked with ghee. Have you done much with ghee, John?
Not a lot. And thank goodness you tell us how to make our own ghee at home, because it's kind of expensive when you buy it in the market.
Oh my God, it's like $30 for a small jar.
Yeah.
My mom would, every summer when the butter went on sale, give me and all my cousins, like six of us, money and coupons, because there was a limit on how much butter you can buy when it's on sale. And she would make us all go in different aisles with like our six blocks of butter and then buy it all. So it'd be like barely enough, you know, tall enough to reach the counter, and I'm giving the lady a coupon and money. And we go home, sit in a circle, unwrap all the butter, and make enough ghee for like three families for the year.
And once, how do you make ghee? Yeah.
I suggest buying really good European butter, because that's a higher fat content. Mm-hmm. And you just melt that down until there's clarified butter, which is all once the white stuff, kind of milk fat, floats to the top. Mm-hmm. And then when you see it kind of fall down and brown a little, that's when you get to ghee. What I like to do is let the milk fat turn black, essentially.
Yeah.
And then strain it.
Yeah.
And
it's one of those, it lasts forever.
Oh,
once
yeah.
Once you
And you can keep it at room temperature at that point? You don't need to refrigerate it.
I never refrigerate my ghee. I've always kept it out. My mom just keeps a big steel container of it.
Okay, I'm going to make a point next time butter goes on sale.
So you have in the cakes and tarts section, I'll mention one, and then you have to mention one.
Okay.
Which I just loved was the ricotta cheesecake. Ricotta cheesecake.
Yes.
Because it's so simple.
Yes.
You know, it's like cheesecake can be so, you know, for a lot of people, because they're very complicated recipes for
it. And then you might crack or, you got to have a water bath sometimes. Mm-hmm. All sorts of stuff. Yeah, the ricotta cheesecake is actually, again, another Italian-inspired dessert. So there is baked sandesh. Sandesh is, we make our own cheese similar to paneer. It's essentially how you make paneer, which is you cook the, you warm up milk, add lime or lemon juice to it or any type of acid, and then pretty much strain that cheese and then make sandesh, which is by mixing sugar into it.
Oh.
So it's pretty much ricotta.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of put a mash these two things together. It was this, you know, ricotta cheesecake that one of the Italian grandmothers on my block would make and would drop off at our house sometimes. And it just reminded me of the baked sandesh that I've seen again at the Bengali sweet shops.
Well, the couple of things that you added to it, I just love toasted coconut, which is part of the ingredients. And then, of course, cardamom.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, cardamom and everything. If you don't like cardamom, this book might not be for you.
This could be called the Italian-Indian dessert.
Yeah.
Almost. Under the cakes and tarts, the coconut and jaggery tart with coconut almond crust. Mm-hmm. That, to me, because I have a significant wife who is gluten, would prefer gluten.
Gluten-free.
And then I've made almond tarts before with toasted coconut, and this is right up our alley. So thanks for including this in the
You'd be surprised. A lot of Indian desserts are gluten-free.
Just naturally.
Yeah. I would say like a good 40%
is
of
that
the books.
Some
really?
That's really?
Fascinating.
Is that some type of peanut brittle that's sitting in front of you?
Yeah, so I have an almond and cardamom jaggery jiki.
Is that in the book?
Yes, and jiki means brittle. It's
Is that beautiful.
Okay, now I'm going to... How can you eat this without...
crunching all over the place. Sorry,
crunching
I should have brought
on
something
radio.
Else.
Steve will not talk for the next 4 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
So what page is this one on?
This one's on 50.
All right.
But it's so easy to make.
Ooh, nice.
And I do include...
Is this going to pull out a filling?
No, I promise it won't. That's bad jiki or bad brittle.
Jiki.
I can't.
So this should melt in my mouth and just fall apart.
It should just crunch and melt.
Okay. And you know, you use baking soda, and so it gives it a little lift.
Yeah.
Actually, which is traditionally used with brittles.
Yes.
Yeah, anyway, loose baking soda. And then drinks, we have to, we talked a little bit about those. But you have one that I'm going to try just because you said, well, either you'll like it or you won't. And it's the watermelon basil seed thing. Now, what do basil seeds do? The picture of it is just, it's otherworldly.
Yeah. So basil seeds, kind of similar to chia, will form this like kind of gelatinous coating to them, and but not as thick as chia seeds. Like, you're not going to make a pudding out of this.
Yeah.
But they're another kind of Ayurvedic ingredient in sherbet. So again, sherbets are had during summers when it's really hot, and it's supposed to have very cooling effects. But Persian drinks also usually have basil seeds in them. This is one of those kind of Persian, Middle Eastern into India type of
recipes. and you mentioned that because they are kind of gelatinous once they soak and kind of crunchy too.
Yeah.
They're kind of like the Vietnamese boba drinks or something, you know,
which
is very weird also.
Yes. Yeah, either you love it or you hate it. It's great.
The one recipe which I'm dying to try, and this is wonderful because it's somewhat of a Eastern European meets Japanese meets Indian, and that's Bernvita babka.
Yeah.
You have the Eastern European traditional New York babka, and then you use, but you use a Japanese-style milk bread dough instead of the brioche, because it's simpler, isn't it?
Yeah, much simpler, and it's just very fluffy and light and easy to get there because you're using the tazong, which is essentially when you're tenzong is when you mix flour and milk and almost make like a roux and then add that, and it helps just the gluten formation, and it just it gives you a very tender, soft bread.
And you add malted milk powder to this. Isn't that wild?
Well, you made the point that milk powders, it's great rather than having to cook milk down until all the liquid is going.
Yeah, the latest episode of Great British Bake Off, they actually had a dairy episode, and they made their own koya. And halfway through the episode, the judges come out, and they're like, we're just kidding. We know it's taking really long. You just have to make one dessert with koya. The rest you could do, use condensed milk and milk powder.
Yeah.
So it's a shortcut, but the quality doesn't suffer.
No.
So we've chatted for an hour, and it's time to give away this wonderful cookbook. Mm-hmm. Would you give us your favorite number today between 1 and 12?
I will do 24. Oh, sorry, 12. 4.
There's always one in
my
the
My brain is just
caller number 4?
Yeah.
Caller number 4 at 636-1350 will win this autographed copy of Milk and Cardamom, spectacular cakes, custards, and more inspired by the flavors of India. And if you love making desserts, and maybe even if you don't, you will be inspired to start learning some wonderful new ideas and techniques and ingredients. And none of this is over anybody's head. You've made this really approachable.
Thank you.
Thank you for writing this wonderful book.
Is there another book coming?
I'm working on it.
Oh, good.
So the reason I'm
a dessert book?
This one, I want to do more regional Gujarati cuisine and kind of follow the foods my parents grew up with in the village and then how it changed as, you know, certain ingredients were inaccessible to them in the U.S. and what they used in the U.S. when they came here. because the same lentils and beans are not available.
Well, we hope you'll keep us in mind when the book gets near publication. We'd love to have you back. Okay. The book is Milk and Cardamom, Spectacular Cakes, Custards, and More, inspired by the flavors of India, written by Hital Vasavada. It was wonderful meeting you. Thanks for coming to Santa Rosa today.
Thank you for having me.
How about the Harvest Fair?
Wow.
All right.
It's that time of year again.
It's John and Steve and Tom Simoneau, along with Gwen Kilcher, all at the 45th annual.
And if you come to the fair, come by and see us.
Please do. We're set up in front of the Hall of Flowers next Saturday at the Sonoma County's 45th annual Harvest Fair. We'll be talking to the best of the best, the sweepstakes winners for reds and whites and sparklings and some other surprises.
And weren't you a judge or something?
I was one of the judges in the dessert category. Yeah. And so we'll be tasting some sweepstakes desserts and sweepstakes appetizers all next Saturday. Thanks for listening. From the KSRO Kitchen, I'm Steve Garner. This is KSRO Santa Rosa.